Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 36 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 5th of September 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Margaret and Andy. And in the news, the council leaves the lights on. Unsurprisingly, it's been a busy summer, and the courts get fed up with Lady P. Well, it's another non-birthday week, but plenty of news, plus Grapevine Extra looking at some local wildlife. But without delay, it's the first part of the news.
Hello, and here's this week's news. And it's Andy and Margaret to read for you. My first story. A man has lost his battle to build an extension to his house over concerns about light pollution. Dick Smith wanted to build a three-story extension to his house on Market Road in Borough Castle. The plans also included removing a conservatory and building a two-story garage with a first-floor home office. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council refused the application over its poor quality design and adverse impact on the landscape, in particular the Broad's dark sky zone. Mr. Smith appealed the decision to the planning inspectorate, but has now seen his case dismissed, with the inspector echoing the Borough Council's concerns over light pollution and the proposed design of the building. In a report, the inspector said, "During the hours of darkness, the extensive illumination sources would make the building highly conspicuous within the wider landscape and from within the Broads." There were three objections to the plans, from the Broads Authority, Borough Castle Parish Council and the Borough Council's Conservation Officer. All of them shared concerns over the proposed design and the impact of the development on the Broads dark sky zone.
Hello, this is Margaret, and I'm here with my first part of the news. So if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin. And this is all about floodlights left on all night. A council blunder which saw its 3G football pitch floodlights left on overnight has angered a neighbour who was disturbed by ongoing issues at the sports facility. John Miller, 82, lives opposite the Wellesley Recreation Ground and woke up during one night to see the facility still beaming bright. He says that the lights being left on isn't the biggest issue there, and that he and his neighbours' homes have been repeatedly pelted with footballs flying over the fence. "I couldn't believe the lights were left on overnight. I checked at 2 a.m. and 2:45 a.m. and then I checked again at 5 a.m. It seems absurd. Somebody is paying for that, and it must be very expensive. What a waste of money," Mr. Miller said. "If it is the council who are supposed to switch the lights off, then we taxpayers will have to pick up the bill. So when the lights were left on, it made me compelled to ask who picks up the bill, but then also mention that despite there being a 12 to 15 foot high fence, the pitch needs overhead netting fitted to reduce safety risks. There is a real risk of the ball hitting a cyclist, a motorcyclist, a pedestrian, sitting at home and watching TV in the evenings, and then suddenly there's a bang. It frightens the life out of my wife and me in the evenings while we are relaxing." The retired man also says that he has been confronted by people collecting the footballs from his and his neighbour's front gardens. "You won't believe how rude some people have been, swearing in my face when collecting the footballs," Mr. Miller said. "I've spoken to people from various clubs about this, but the abuse hasn't stopped." He's spoken to the Borough Council and voiced his concerns about the flying footballs and suggested to them about netting the facility, which closes at 10 p.m. A Great Yarmouth Borough Council spokesman said, "The lights were accidentally left on one evening this week after the pitch was used. We are grateful that we were alerted so we could ensure they were correctly switched off. The cost of the lights is paid for by the council. A combined £972,000 had been invested in the new Floodlook 9V9 3G artificial grass, what that means I don't know, I'm sorry, football pitch, which was constructed at the Wellesley Recreation Ground on the site of the former tennis courts, opened in June 2023.
We have a new restaurant planned. A restaurant in the Broads is preparing for a major relaunch with a fine dining focus and a Michelin-starred trained chef at the helm. Formerly the Mermaid Slipper, the eatery located on Staithe Road in Stalham is being rebranded as Restaurant 1812, and the name marks the year the property was first built. During restoration work, the team uncovered an original kiln and flint walls, which had been incorporated into the redesign. Leading the kitchen is 35-year-old chef Lee Tyler, who trained under Gordon Ramsay and Simon Rogan at his Lake District restaurant, L'Enclume, which holds 3 Michelin stars. And the head chef most recently worked at Holt's Michelin-starred Meadow Suite. Originally from Peterborough, but raised in Norfolk, he said, "We've tried to expose the character of the building again. It's such a lovely spot, but perhaps one that gets a little forgotten about. With the museum and the boatyard nearby, it's a great place to be." The restaurant will serve tasting menus built around seasonal, locally sourced produce, including Wagyu beef from a nearby farm. Desserts will be made without refined sugar, using natural sweeteners such as honey to create indulgent but healthier dishes. Restaurant 1812 is owned by GP Dr. Julian Brown, founder of the health charity Health Amplifier, which supports diabetes patients. The restaurant will work with the charity to promote healthier eating and will also offset its carbon footprint through tree planting. Mr. Tyler said he hoped the project would inspire other young chefs to bring new life to empty buildings across the county. There are lots of buildings standing empty at the moment. I think young chefs should be looking at them and saying, maybe I can make a go of it. It takes hard work, but why not? Restaurant 1812 will open in September and is currently recruiting staff.
A woman has died after a hit-and-run incident involving a Ford Puma in Great Yarmouth. The collision happened in Nelson Road Central on August the 8th, when the car collided with a female pedestrian. The woman in her 30s was taken to hospital with serious injuries, and police confirmed today that she has since died. The driver of the car initially stopped following the crash and got out of the vehicle, but then returned to the vehicle and drove off. A man in his 20s was later located and arrested on suspicion of aggravated vehicle taking, failing to stop, causing serious injury by careless driving, driving without a licence or insurance, and drug driving. He was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning and released on bail until September the 11th. Police say the suspect has been updated by officers and is assisting with the investigation. Officers are particularly keen to speak to a taxi driver who was driving a dark-coloured minibus-style taxi with a round-shaped logo on the side, who they believe was driving in the area at the time. The driver is not believed to be involved in the crash, but may have important dashcam footage.
A neo-Nazi blood and honour gig has been cancelled. A neo-Nazi music festival that was scheduled to take place in Great Yarmouth has been cancelled after a backlash from locals. Norfolk police said they have spoken with the organisers of the far-right gig, which was to take place on September 6th and 7th, and confirmed the event will not now take place. There were fears that the Resurrection 4 concert, which would have been the UK's biggest white power event in 10 years, could have sparked unrest in the town if it went ahead. The two-day festival was due to take place on the same day as Yarmouth Pride, and also would have come at a time of heightened tensions and acute pressure on policing resources caused by ongoing protests in the county about asylum seekers. As speculation mounted over the gig's location, police also spoke to the owners of the Jube, a bar in Great Yarmouth, about the event. But the venue's boss, Bradley Fish, denied the concert had ever been planned to happen there. It is not known if officers spoke to any other venues around the town. According to sources, police had been looking at ways to stop the event going ahead, if necessary, by prompting an emergency council licensing meeting at which they could raise public safety concerns. Under the Licensing Act 2003, a senior police officer can issue an order to close individual premises for up to 24 hours if disorder is happening or likely to happen, or if a noise nuisance is being caused. Campaign group Hope Not Hate said more than 500 tickets have been sold for the two-day event. The organisers of the cancelled festival are linked to Blood and Honour, a far-right music promotion network and political group founded in the 1980s, which has been banned in several countries. According to Hope Not Hate, the gig's principal organiser was a supporter of the British Movement, an openly national socialist organisation which pushes out deeply racist and anti-Semitic material on its social media channels. Previously, a spokesman for Great Yarmouth Borough Council said the council was aware of disquiet around the proposed music event and was speaking with organisers.
A huge shake-up, which will see all Norfolk's councils scrapped and new ones created, has passed its first House of Commons hurdle. But not all county MPs backed the reforms. The Labour government's plans will trigger the biggest change in local government in Norfolk since 1974, ripping up the current setup of eight councils. They would be replaced by new unitary councils, which would have responsibility for all services, although it has yet to be determined how many councils there would be. The new council or councils would have extra powers over issues such as transport, planning and housing through a devolution deal under proposals in the English Devolution and the Community Empowerment Bill. The changes will also see a mayor for Norfolk and Suffolk, which would help to drive investment and growth. MPs backing the reforms on Tuesday, voting 365 to 164, majority 201, to pass the bill at second reading. Conservative James Wilde, North West Norfolk, and Liberal Democrat Stephen Aquarone, North Norfolk, voted against it. Jerome Mayhew, Tory MP for Broadland and Fakenham, was one of the tellers, which meant he did not vote, but counted the votes against the bill. Whilst MPs George Freeman, Mid Norfolk, Adrian Ramsay, Waveney Valley, and Rupert Lowe, Great Yarmouth, were not present for the vote. The question of how many councils there should be in Norfolk has created divisions, with Norfolk County Council wanting one, South Norfolk favouring two, and the other councils, Norwich, Great Yarmouth, Broadland, Breckland, King's Lynn and North Norfolk, preferring three. The councils have to submit their proposals next month, but government ministers have said they are prepared to impose a model if there is no consensus. Norwich North MP Ms MacDonald told the House of Commons that she backed the three council model, which would see a greater Norwich authority on expanded boundaries. She said that would be a game changer, but that a single unitary favoured by County Hall would be too big and too fail to recognise the unique growth opportunities in Norwich. She said, although we may disagree on the model, it is important that there is healthy debate on this subject. Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner said the bill will end the begging bowl micromanaging culture. But Shadow Communities Secretary Sir James Cleverly accused her of attempting a power grab. The bill will progress to committee stage, where the proposals will receive further scrutiny.
And I've got another extended story, and it's one that's been, the dispute has been running for quite a while. It's the bitter and bizarre saga which has been dubbed Britain's poshest tenancy dispute. But an extremely rare court order appears to have finally brought an end to the seemingly never-ending case of Norfolk's wealthy Cater family and the so-called Lady P, Patricia Ramshaw, their sex therapist former tenant. At the most recent, and almost certainly final, court showdown between the parties, a judge served the self-styled Lady P with a civil extended restraining order, preventing her from making any further legal claims against Sam Cater. In a withering conclusion, the judge accused her of attempting to use litigation as a weapon against the family and of misusing the courts. The increasingly hostile feud began in November 2021, when Lady P agreed to rent the old house from the family. She paid a year's rent up front for the Grade 2 listed period home in Ranworth, nestled on large grounds in the heart of the Broads. But tensions boiled over almost immediately, with the relationship between tenant and landlord far from harmonious. A tribunal hearing months later heard extraordinary allegations flung between the two warring parties. Lady P claimed the property was uninhabitable, suffering from mould, damp and a lack of central heating. She also alleged that Jane Cater, her landlord's mother, had spied on her from the tower of nearby Ranworth Church. The Caters, conversely, alleged that Lady P moved a menagerie of more than a dozen animals onto site with her and allowed her pig to destroy the property's garden. The tribunal ruled in favour of the Caters, but did nothing to bring an end to the hostilities. Ever since, the case has been back and forth between civil courts, with Lady P filing several claims against the Caters. But the saga finally seems to have reached a conclusion following civil judge Karen Walden-Smith's landmark ruling, in which she levelled a scathing criticism of Lady P's approach. In her summing up, the judge wrote, "This claimant views litigation as being a never-ending process. That could not be further from the truth." She added that the case had plainly become an abuse of the court's process, accusing Lady P of attempting to use litigation as a weapon. Judge Walden-Smith wrote, "She may well feel she has a genuine grievance in this matter. She may well feel that she wishes to use the court as a way to establish her position against Mr. Cater. But she cannot continue to do that." In court transcripts seen by this newspaper, Lady P ruled out making further claims, suggesting the saga is finally over. She said, "I believe when I was renting a house and paying £50,000 over, I believed it was an honest transaction and I was led to believe that it was a lawful renting and it was not. I've suffered hugely because of the actions of Mr. Cater and have attempted to save my world and save my life actually and have gone through the courts to do that, believing that the courts would listen to the issues. I understand what you've said today and really have no intention at all to pursue anything else against Mr. Cater." In a statement issued following the conclusion of the case, she added, "I paid 12 months' rent up front and the house was not fit to be rented. The Caters don't want you to know that." Mr. Cater declined to comment. The order made against Lady P, an extended civil restraining order, is a rare measure used to protect court time and prevent vexatious litigation. It is rare in that currently Lady P is one of fewer than 200 people nationwide who are bound by one. The order, which was made in June, effectively prevents Lady P from making any kind of further civil claim against Sam Cater without the express permission of a judge.
A local lifeboat has received an award to celebrate 200 years of saving lives in and around the area where it is based. The chief executive of the RNLI, Peter Sparks, visited the Great Yarmouth and Galston lifeboat last week to present the crew with their certificate. After speaking with the crew and shop volunteers, Mr. Sparks presented the prize to the coxswain of Great Yarmouth and Galston, Andy Mason. Mr. Mason said, "It's an honour and a privilege to receive this certificate in recognition of 200 years of rich life-saving history at this station. Long may we continue saving lives at sea. On behalf of everyone at this station, thank you." Last month, crowds gathered on Galston Pier alongside RNLI mascot Stormy Stan to watch the Great Yarmouth and Galston lifeboat demonstrate various rescue scenarios from over the last 200 years. Paddleboarders were plucked from the water using the ALB's A-frame hoist and slings, and the crew showed their firefighting capability and put out a fishing boat ablaze, among other scenarios.
A new and unique indoor play area for children has opened on the coast. Townies Indoor Play is a brand new, specially designed indoor play area in Hemsby. Will Newman, who runs the business with his wife, said, "Townies Indoor Play is unique because it crosses role play and imagination play with soft play. It's unlike any other indoor play, home to possibly the only soft play aeroplane in the country. It's 6 metres long," he added. The venue, which opened on Saturday, August 30 at the Crescent next to Las Vegas Amusements, also has a small cafe, offering freshly ground coffee and snacks. The centre is designed for children up to 7 years old and will host self-catering birthday parties. Mr. Newman said, "We're all about learning through play. We have so many different themes for children to explore, and they've all been dreamed up by me and my wife and brought to life. The centre has 15 themed areas, including a fire engine, a chicken barn, and an ice cream van."
How goody, I must go there.
See you there.
A man was subjected to a two-hour ordeal as he was raped at knife point in his home in Great Yarmouth. Curtis Harper entered the victim's home armed with a knife and raped him, as well as making threats and robbing the victim. At Norwich Crown Court, Harper, who was unknown to the victim, was given a life sentence and will serve a minimum of 11 years. The court heard how the victim had been sleeping and awoke to Harper standing over him, holding the knife. Over the course of 2 hours, the victim was threatened and raped before Harper fled the scene. Before leaving, he told his victim that he did not know whether to leave him dead or alive. When Harper, 31, and of Ordnance Road, Great Yarmouth, fled, he took the bedsheets, some jewellery, two knives and money for a bus home. His victim called the police immediately, and two officers on foot patrol found and identified Harper before arresting him. Harper had denied two counts of rape, one count of sexual assault, and one count of aggravated burglary, but was convicted by unanimous jury verdict following a 6-day trial at Norwich Crown Court on June the 24th. Speaking after the sentencing, investigating officer DC Matthew Hubbard said, "This was a horrifying attack carried out at knife point in the victim's own home by a man he did not know. The victim has shown immense bravery throughout the investigation, and this has resulted in a dangerous offender being brought to justice. I would like to personally thank the victim and his family for their unwavering courage throughout the legal process. Our thoughts remain with them, and we hope today's sentence provides some measure of justice and reassurance. We will always stand beside victims to ensure those responsible are held to account. The 31-year-old had denied 2 counts of rape, 1 count of sexual assault, and 1 count of aggravated burglary, but was convicted by unanimous jury verdict. Curtis Harper was handed a life sentence and will serve a minimum of 11 years and 109 days. The knife will also be destroyed.
More in-depth stories in just a while, but first, some news in brief.
Police were called following reports that 2 teenagers attempted to handcuff a child. The incident took place in Southtown Common in Great Yarmouth last Friday. The pair did not handcuff the child, but they did approach them and speak to them. Officers did not attend the incident, and no further action will be taken by the police.
A man from Lingwood has been charged with 11 offences, including theft and criminal damage. Richard Patterson, of no fixed address, was arrested on Saturday in connection with several incidents in August. He has been charged with 4 counts of driving without a licence and 4 counts of driving without insurance. He was also charged with theft, criminal damage and failing to provide a specimen for analysis. He's due to appear at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on October the 8th.
A bomb threat was made at a business premises in Norwich Road, Caister. Police and fire crews were called to the address at about 8:20 p.m. on Tuesday, after the call was made. The building was evacuated and it was confirmed that nobody had been injured. Emergency services remained on scene for several hours and a thorough review has deemed the call to be a hoax.
Drivers faced long delays after 5 vehicles collided on the A47. Police were called to the Braden Bridge just before 3 p.m. on Wednesday. The vehicles involved were a black Vauxhall Astra, a white Volkswagen, a blue Volkswagen Transporter, a white Citroen Berlingo and a black Renault Clio Dynamic. The issue caused queues to form between the Gapton Hall roundabout and the Vauxhall roundabout. The ambulance service was not in attendance.
And this next report is full of numbers, so I'll apologise now if I fall over my own teeth trying to read it. People in Norfolk have won more than £1 million in this month's premium bonds prize draw. In total, 364 people took home a share of £1,238,000, averaging £3,410 per person. 2 lucky people scooped an incredible £100,000, and 3 others bagged £50,000. Another 12 people won £25,000. 14 people won £10,000. 29 people took home £5,000, and hundreds more won £1,000. Premium bonds are the UK's biggest saving product, with more than 24 million people saving over £122 billion in them, according to Money Saving Expert. And I can report, sadly, I wasn't any of those people and didn't win anything. How about you, Margaret?
Nor was I. No, sadly neglected yet again. But mind you, when I look back, I think I just bought £1 premium bond, I think, way back in the 60s. So I think Ernie's forgotten about me.
Well,
I've gone to the bottom of the pile.
I had about £5 worth bought for me when I was born.
What century was this?
Exactly.
Thank you.
Don't think they do white fivers anymore. Anyway.
Right. Free retail training is being rolled out for businesses in towns across Norfolk, and people working in retail businesses in Galston, Hunstanton, Attleborough, Aylsham and Sheringham are now able to sign up for 6 free retail skills workshop as part of Norfolk County Council's Retail Excellence Programme. Alexandra Heeman is a high-growth business advisor with New Anglia Growth Hub and is responsible for the High Streets Matter initiative. She said, The main purpose of the programme is to upskill our high street retailers so they are prepared and confident to embrace the challenges and opportunities of modern retail. The next Retail Excellence training programme begins on September the 24th with 60 places available. Applications are open until September the 19th.
And a sewage alert has been issued at Galston Beach. Margaret's wincing, she's got a beach hut.
I'm not going down today, though.
It comes after heavy rainfall over the last few days, with more downpours expected throughout today. The alert was issued by Surfers Against Sewage, a website that monitors water quality levels at beaches across the country. A spokeswoman for Anglian Water said, "A beach-aware alert was raised on September the 2nd at Galston Beach after heavy rainfall in the area activated a storm discharge. The overflow operated as it should to protect homes and businesses from flooding."
A man has pleaded guilty to a public order offence after an incident in Great Yarmouth. There were as many as 7 police cars on Theatre Plain on August the 1st, after a man in his 20s became agitated when an officer attempted to arrest him for a public order offence. Jamai Audley, aged 25, of no fixed abode, was charged with displaying behaviour likely to cause harassment, alarm or distress following the incident. He appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on August the 27th and pleaded guilty to the offence. Audley was ordered to pay an £80 fine, £85 in costs and a £32 surcharge fee.
Hundreds of drivers were caught speeding in the Great Yarmouth area this summer. Police have been cracking down on vehicle antisocial behaviour, and each weekend in August, the camera safety team was deployed to areas across Great Yarmouth, Galston, Caister and Ormsby, where reports most commonly emerge. And a total of 200 speeding offences were recorded. Great Yarmouth Police said vehicle antisocial behaviour has been a consistent concern raised by the community, and therefore we're working with partners to address it.
OK, the second part of the more meaty news is upon us, starting with some antisocial behaviour.
An e-bike rider pulling wheelies down a road packed with holidaymakers almost hit a woman in her 70s. The incident happened at approximately 1:15 p.m. on Sunday, August 24th, when an electric bike spread through the seaside hamlet of California near Great Yarmouth. According to local man Tony Dakin, the balaclava-clad rider was pulling a wheelie as they rode towards the California Tavern, before turning around and repeating the stunt. He said that his wife Kathleen, who is severely visually impaired and with hearing implants, had gone into the road to find out the cause of the noise. Ms. Dakin said, "When I heard a noise, it zoomed by quite quickly. And I thought, what the heck was that? I saw a whole bunch of people standing to the side of the road." She saw the rider doing the wheelie and tried to slow them down. But he went right towards me as if to say, "I'm doing whatever I want to do." And it scared me. The rider narrowly missed her and continued on the wrong side of the road, pulling wheelies again. Mr. Dakin said it was a miracle that nobody was hurt, as any collision would have almost certainly resulted in severe injuries or possibly death. On the same day, there were social media reports citing similar occurrences in Newport Road and also in Scrapby, close to the ice cream van. Earlier this year, a Galston man was fined £1,500 after being caught doing a wheelie and revving on his motorbike. That incident was picked up by a new noise-activated camera on the Great Yarmouth seafront. The cameras were installed last year as part of a scheme to tackle antisocial behaviour and excessively noisy vehicles in the area.
A local food bank is set to expand by splitting into two separate services. From Monday, the Yarmouth and Maglan Food Bank transitioned into two different food banks. The new organisations will be named Great Yarmouth Food Bank and Galston Food Bank. Each food bank will be operated by its local communities. Great Yarmouth Food Bank will be run by Great Yarmouth Pathway, and Galston Food Bank will be managed by St Mary Magdalene Church. Both charities will continue to work with the national food bank network, the Trussell Trust. The changes aim to improve local responsibility, strengthen connections with the neighbourhoods, and build closer relationships with volunteers, donors, and those in need of support. While the day-to-day operations for those using the service will remain mostly the same, the new structure is expected to improve decision-making and community engagement locally. The two food banks distributed 4,803 food parcels last year, including 1,470 for children. Jen King, manager of Great Yarmouth Pathway, said, "This development is about strengthening our local ownership and accountability. The needs in Great Yarmouth and surrounding areas are real and urgent, and this change will help us to continue to meet those needs more effectively." Anna Price, community lead at St Mary Magdalene Church, said, "Our vision is not just to provide food in a crisis, but to walk alongside people, offer support and work towards a community when no one goes hungry." Great Yarmouth Food Bank will continue to serve NR30 postcodes and Cobham. Galston Food Bank will serve NR31 postcodes of Galston, Southtown, Bradwell and Hopton.
A house in a cemetery in a seaside village could be demolished after falling into disrepair. The lodge on Caistron-Sea Cemetery off Ormsby Road has remained empty for 9 years and has become derelict. The village parish council has urged Great Yarmouth Borough Council, which owns the site, to take action and either repair or sell the building. But it seems more likely it will be turned into rubble due to historic restrictions on the house. A spokesman for the Borough Council said, "Caister Cemetery Lodge is in a very poor state of repair, and there have been a number of proposals over the past few years to redevelop it. However, the cost of bringing it back into use as housing far outweighs any potential end value, and any available money would be more effectively used to purchase properties elsewhere to serve more people. The building was left to the council in a very poor condition and has a covenant that means it cannot be sold. The council is now exploring alternatives, including demolition, but before any decision is considered, there will be consultation with interested parties, including the parish council."
A driver who failed a cannabis test after being stopped on the A47 has claimed it was the result of medication he was taking. Hikmatullah Shinwari, 23, was found to be over the limit for the drug while at the wheel of a Citroen on the dual carriageway near Acle on February the 17th. A police roadside test found he exceeded the limit of a substance linked to cannabis use. However, appearing at Norwich Magistrates Court, the 23-year-old pleaded not guilty to drug driving. He will stand trial on April the 27th next year, after the court was told he maintained the failed test had been the result of prescribed medication. District Judge Matthew Bone said he would need to provide a medical report and prove he was not topping it up with cannabis in an illegal form. His defence said they were likely to call an expert to give evidence. Shinwari of Brazen Gate in Norwich also pleaded guilty to driving without insurance or a valid licence. He will be sentenced for those offences after his trial.
And this next report I think we can interpret as good news for the area. the demand for Broad's boating holidays may have levelled out since Britain's COVID staycation boom, but Norfolk's largest operator says this summer has been its busiest season since the pandemic. Richardson saw booking increase by an unprecedented 25% during the height of the pandemic, originally targeting a 5 to 10% uplift year on year. Record levels of domestic tourism helped introduce holidaymakers to staycations on the Broads, with many now returning year after year. People came on boating holidays and fell in love with it, and it has now become part of their annual holiday portfolio, said Greg Munford, chief executive of Richardson's. It might not be they stay for a week, but they will certainly book a short break. Around a quarter of Richardson's guests are new to boating holidays, with the majority having experienced breaks on Norfolk's waterways before. You can almost liken it to ski holidays, Mr. Munford said. You get people who go skiing and absolutely fall in love with it. And if there's a holiday there, they're going to go on each year. It will be a ski holiday. But for others, if it's not their annual week-long family holiday, they might still get away for a short break. Some will enjoy it, then look to do other holiday activities and revisit it in 5 years. We generally see that sort of trend going through peaks and troughs over a 5-year cycle. More than 75,000 people holidayed with Richardson's last year. All of its boats are pet friendly, with almost a third of guests bringing their dogs with them. The family business was established by Robert Richardson Jr. in 1944 and now operates a fleet of 207 holiday charter boats and 42 day boats from its marinas in Salem and Wroxham. The firm's success so far this year, with bookings up 7% on this time last year, is partly down to it reducing the price of holidays during the school summer holidays in an effort to ease cost of living pressures on families. The weather has also played a part, with this spring being the warmest and sunniest on record across the UK, according to official Met Office statistics. Boating holidays are typically a considered purchase, with people booking up to 12 months in advance. And Mr. Munford said this year's warm weather will have a major influence on forward bookings for next spring and summer. The weather this year had more of an influence on our Hemsby Beach holiday park than it did our boating holidays, with the number of last-minute bookings being ahead of what we would ever expect to achieve. Richardson's holiday park in Hemsby is home to 381 units, including more than 250 caravans, alongside lodges, apartments, bungalows and chalets. The company employs a total of 190 people across its business and has been hit hard by rising employment costs. Because of the large increase in our payroll, we have had to look at managing operations more efficiently without any detriment to the guest, which is the most important thing. Everything we do is about investing in the guest experience, and by investing in our own people, we make the biggest investment in delivering that experience.
A dance performance is set to take centre stage at Great Yarmouth this autumn. Glorious Forms will be performed on October the 5th at 2:30 p.m, with doors opening at 2 p.m. at St George's Theatre. The show is a collaboration between Inclusive Community Dance Companies, Dance Moves You and In Cahoots. They aim to celebrate dancing bodies in all their glorious forms. After the performance, attendees can enjoy tea and cake and participate in an informal workshop. The workshop is accessible to everyone and will provide an insight into the company's work. It will also offer a chance to learn some choreography and experience the joy of moving together. Dance Moves You is an inclusive community dance company for adult independent movers with learning disabilities and volunteers. In Cahoots celebrates the possibilities that arises from dancers with and without disabilities dancing together. Tickets for the event are priced at £15, £10, £5 and £3, and they can be purchased from the St George's Theatre website. This is an opportunity to witness and participate in a celebration of dance in all its forms.
The Great Yarmouth Beer and Circus Festival is set to kick off at a new venue. The annual event will take place at the Ice House on Bridge Road from Thursday, September the 18th to Sunday, September 21st. The festival will feature a variety of beers and ciders from regional breweries, including Lakens, which will also be the lead supporting brewery. A Best Of award ceremony will be judged by East Norfolk Camera and Lakens. This year, the festival will also include a significant increase in circus and other live entertainment, all included in the entry fee. The event promises new performances, which will be announced to subscribers of the festival's mailing list. The festival is open on the Thursday from 5pm to 11pm, on Friday and Saturday from 12 noon to 11pm, and on Sunday from 12 noon to 4pm. Tickets are £3 if pre-booked online and free on Sunday. The festival organisers have promised icy cold beers and cool entertainment. Further information can be found on the festival's website.
A family's holiday in a caravan in Norfolk was ruined by an infestation of bedbugs which saw their six-year-old child taken to hospital. Michael Sadder and his daughter stayed in a privately rented and managed caravan located in California Cliffs Holiday Park in Scrappy for four nights in August. The 60-year-old, who lives in London, said he loves Norfolk and has visited the county many times, but he only had one word for his most recent stay. It was horrendous, he said. The main culprit was bedbugs. The small parasitic insects, which are small and often live on furniture and bedding, had infested the caravan. As Mr. Sadder had privately rented the accommodation, the park's operator, Park Dean Resorts, had no involvement with the issues experienced during the stay. While staying at the caravan, Mr. Sadder's daughter was left covered in bites and spots from head to toe. The entire place was infested with bedbugs, Mr. Sadder said, forcing them to wash their clothes and throw some of them away. After returning to London, he took his daughter to an out-of-hours doctor at Finchley Memorial Hospital, where she was prescribed antibiotics. The doctor advised me to contact the local council and inform them that the caravan must be fumigated before it can be used again. Mr. Sadder said the owner of the caravan is refusing to admit there is anything wrong with their property. The bedbugs were not the only problem. Overall, the caravan seems to be suffering from a general state of negligence and disrepair. The kitchen was in poor condition. In some areas, it was literally falling apart. A board by the side of the fridge even fell on my daughter as she walked past. Mr. Sadger informed Great Yarmouth Borough Council about the condition of the caravan, and a council spokesperson said that one of their officers had visited the holiday park. They said the caravan is not currently in use or accessible, but that the owner had been informed of the complaint. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for California Cliffs Holiday Park said, "We have strict standards for hygiene and cleanliness in our own accommodation. And while we do provide owners with guides to help them ensure the holiday homes are fit to be let, we have no control over what guests arrive when booking privately." Bedbugs are tiny pests, usually just 4 to 5 millimetres long, and can be hard to see. Instead, look for signs: small dark blood stains on mattress edges, droppings, shed skins, or a sweet, sickly odour. Despite their name, bedbugs just don't live in beds. They hide in cracks, behind wallpaper, under skirting boards, and in soft furnishings, such as sofas, curtains, and chairs. They're even known to hitch rides on planes, trains and coaches.
Well, I do hope you're not finding yourself involuntarily scratching after that one.
Say, are you looking at me? And oh, yes, I am.
Anyway, a suspected arsonist. A man accused of starting a fire in an upstairs hotel room before jumping out of the window is set to appear in court. Adam Wilson, 39, of Wellesley Road, Great Yarmouth, has been charged with arson with intent to endanger life and arson with recklessness as to whether life was endangered. It's in connection with a blaze which gutted the Ladybird Guest House in Great Yarmouth, just metres from the busy Regent Road, at about 4:20 p.m. on Sunday, July the 20th. Officers arrested Wilson at the scene as firefighters battled the blaze, and he was taken to the hospital having suffered severe burns. Witnesses say that Wilson jumped out of an upstairs window as flames were pouring through the building's windows. Now, Norfolk Police have confirmed that Wilson has been remanded into custody and is due to appear at Norwich Crown Court on the 8th of September. The fire service extinguished the fire by 5:15 p.m. and crews remained at the site until 9 p.m. on the day of the incident. Four fire engines, each from Great Yarmouth, Gorston, Acle and Carrow, were sent out to battle the flames. And that was your last news item from Margaret and I.
And thank you and goodbye.
Well, it's not quite as goodbye from them as it's time for Grapevine Extra, featuring a more in-depth look at subjects you may find of interest. And this week, we have some fascinating info about the return of the ospreys to the UK, and indeed to Ranworth in Norfolk.
The story of our first breeding ospreys in the Norfolk Broads reflects the trials, tribulations and celebrations of wildlife conservation over the last 100 years, according to Norfolk Wildlife Trust Conservation Officer Robert Morgan. Meeting with constant challenges, even hostility, good news stories concerning wildlife conservation can be thin on the ground at times. So the significance, after an absence of 250 years, of a successful breeding osprey pair in the Norfolk Broads cannot be understated. For the fledging of two osprey chicks, at Norfolk Wildlife Trust Ranworth Broad Reserve has brought joy and, importantly, hope to so many of us. The re-establishment of this iconic and majestic fish-eating bird to the UK has been one of the great environmental success stories of our age. The osprey story is fascinating. It has involved pioneers of conservation, helped forge modern attitudes to wildlife, and in many ways has typified the highs and lows of rebuilding our natural world. The osprey is unlike any other British bird of prey, having chocolate brown wings and a creamy white belly and legs. The head is also white, with a notable dark brown mask extending through the eyes. As with many birds of prey, known as raptors, the female is larger than the male. Juvenile ospreys have buff-coloured tips to their feathers, giving them a rather scaly appearance. The osprey is probably one of the most widespread raptors in the world, being found from North America across the globe to Australia. Not surprisingly, it nests close to large bodies of water, though on migration it can turn up almost anywhere. European ospreys, despite our increasingly mild winters, migrate to sub-Saharan Africa in the autumn. Ospreys had been driven to extinction in England by 1840, and though increasingly rare, they continued to breed in Scotland until 1916. Along with the usual tales of persecution, it was the search for specimens for the taxidermist's glass case and egg collecting that finally sealed its sad fate. From then on, osprey were only very occasionally spotted at their old haunts. However, in 1956, excitement grew amongst local birdwatchers when a pair established a territory at Loch Garten in Speyside. These two, now famous birds, successfully raised two chicks in 1959. The theft of the eggs in the preceding year prompted the then RSPB Scotland director, George Watson, to instigate Operation Osprey. This involved watchtowers, round-the-clock volunteer guards and barbed wire encircling the nest tree. This seems sadly ironic, as George Watterson spent the best part of the war as a POW. He met Peter Conder, the eventual head of the RSPB, in a German prisoner of war camp, and their passion for wild birds saw them through very dark times. George Watterson's real genius was to go against the established view that the nest site should be kept secret. He invited and encouraged visitors. A large hide was constructed, with telescopes and eventually cameras trained on the nest. The bird's progress made national news each year, and membership of the RSPB quadrupled. Despite these efforts and the public's enthusiasm, it wasn't until 1967 that a second pair of ospreys successfully bred. The attention Loch Garten's ospreys drew was not always welcome, for reminiscent of the recent Sycamore Gap incident, vandals in 1975 deliberately, and for reasons only known to themselves, felled the osprey tree. Despite the slow start for breeding ospreys and the occasional setback, their return did more than excite the growing numbers of bird watchers. After the restrictions and suppression of the war, the osprey story, along with the return of avocets, reawakened the country to the joys of the natural world, and for many the threats it now faced. Loch Garten had 14,000 people pass through the small wooden hide in the first year it was opened. Over 2.5 million have been there since, although it sports a large visitor centre and gift shop now.
When Loch Garten was visited in 1985, there were still only 10 breeding ospreys in Scotland, and it would have been a pipe dream to imagine, in my lifetime, ospreys being at home in the Norfolk Broads. Amazingly, there are now over 300 pairs across the whole of the UK, with the population continuing to grow. Although often seen stopping over on the Broads during migration, about a decade or so ago, individual birds started remaining for most of the summer, but there was little indication a pair would be in the same place at the same time. Young birds returning in the spring often ended up close to where they fledged, following a preference for tried and tested locations. The use of fake nests was successful in encouraging ospreys to try new places, but, like the red kite in mid-Wales, it was felt an introduction scheme was required to break them out into a wider geographical area. Thanks to local wildlife photographers, we've recently discovered that Ranworth's female wears a blue leg ring numbered 2H7. This indicated the bird fledged in 2022 at Beaver Castle in Leicestershire. It's a likely relative of the original translocated birds to Rutland Water, where 64 young ospreys were released between 1996 and 2001. The male does not have a ring, but it's likely to be the same bird that has spent the last few summers at Ranworth Broad. The pair were together last year, spending the summer getting to know one another. And this year they arrived within days of each other and quite early in April. They obviously meant business this time, and they didn't disappoint. NWT's Ranworth Broad Visitor Centre manager, Tiala Leader, kept a log of the Osprey's activities. Her log contains lots of useful details, but these two statements nicely sum up a wonderful summer. 26th of April, 2025. One appears to be staying in the nest a lot now. Could be on eggs. 24th of July, 2025. One chick has definitely fledged. Seen doing lots of little loops around the nest site. Second chick flapping and helicoptering. Both officially fledged by 17:06 hours. During August, the adults and their offspring have been spotted around many of the broads. Let's hope they safely make their increasingly perilous journey to Africa and back, and we see them all next year. Come aboard a wildlife boat trip. During the summer, the ospreys could be seen at the nest. To go on a boat trip at NWT Ranworth Broad. There's plenty of other wildlife to see from the water as well, including otters, kingfishers and marsh harriers. Running from April to October, our guided wildlife boat trips are the perfect way to explore the natural treasures of the Norfolk Broads and learn about this fascinating wild place.
Well, that's all for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Alison and Andrew, and so we look forward to your company once again for your weekly update on all the latest local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. And from everyone at Grapevine, it's bye for now.